The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, it's Patrick Cox here, and you may have heard of the Norwegian writer Karl Ove Knausgård. He's written one gargantuan novel, or maybe it's six. They're called My Struggle, books 1 through 6. These autobiographical novels, they become an international sensation. They've been translated into dozens of languages. And Knausgård, like any self-respecting writer, he cares about how his words are translated. And he has varying degrees of comfort with his many translators.
My English translator, I trust him, and you do whatever you like to do, because it's the energy and the flow that is important, I think, not the details. But I did check the Swedish edition. I checked one thing in that. You know, it's the last sentence in book 5. That's the only thing I checked, and this is true. And that sentence kind of summed up the whole book, and she just wrote something else. She got it all wrong.
Difficult to know who to have more sympathy for there, the writer or the translator. Books change in translation, irrevocably sometimes. And over the years, if they survive over the years, they change even more. They might get retranslated. And in any case, we read the words differently. The stories that may change the most are the ones that evolve through the telling of them. Oral stories, stories that weren't written down for years, sometimes decades. Like the fairy tales recorded by the Brothers Grimm, Hansel and Gretel, Snow White, Cinderella, Rumpelstiltskin, the list goes on. They're beyond famous. But you and I probably don't know these stories very well, or at least in the way that they were recorded by the two Grimm brothers. You know their story, right? They were a couple of academics, linguists, in fact, who collected these oral tales. Now, it's possible that some of these stories did originate in written form. There's some evidence for that. But it's believed that most of them were told. And the volumes of stories that the Grimms collected and put out were a great success. They were translated into all kinds of other languages, including English. And very soon, in the translations, they were, well, censored. Adam Gidwitz, he knows all about this. In fact, he's made it his mission to go back to the written source, the Grimm brothers, and some of their earliest translations, and retell the stories in a modern way, but also in keeping with the tone of the originals. Gidwitz has written 3 volumes of his own interpretations of Grimm stories. Here he is, speaking with The Big Show's Marco Werman.
You know, I came to Grimm embarrassingly late, I think. I was a teacher. I was teaching second grade, and the principal of my school came in to read a story to my students. She chose a story called The Crystal Mountain, where a girl cuts off her finger to open a door. She uses her finger as a key to open a door. And when she read that to my students, first of all, I was shocked and afraid that I was going to get fired. But then I realized she was my boss, and so it was okay. My children were traumatized. But after hearing the story, I thought, huh, these are interesting. And maybe I should look more closely into the real Grimm fairy tales.
Oh, so cutting her finger to open a door, I mean, that fact alone, that detail could be kind of anything, depending on what the brothers Grimm heard when they heard the story. Tell us how they went about collecting the tales that they ultimately wrote down.
So it started in a rather amusing way. In 1806, I believe, there was a relatively well-known writer in Germany named Clemens Brentano, who had become rather famous for publishing a collection of folk songs. He asked the brothers Grimm. He knew that they were into folklore. They, in fact, studied folklore for their legal studies. It was a special branch of law at the time. Mm. He said, "Would you collect some stories for me?" They did. They also invited people to their house to tell them stories. They also brought in people from the lower classes, you know, servants and workers, to collect their tales. And they wrote them down. And they sent them off to Brentano in 1810. And he promptly lost them. Luckily, the brothers Grimm seemed to know their man pretty well, because they made a copy. Mm. And then in 1812, they published their first edition.
In this collection of folktales, what was their original tongue, and were they constantly translating the stories they heard themselves?
They were officials in government, so they spoke High German. Their stories were brought to them in their own dialect and in other dialects as well. And in fact, they published many of those stories, for example, a classic favorite called The Juniper Tree, in dialect, which gave the story a folksy homespun quality.
Lebt to ihre Mutter und said, "Ach, Mutter, ich hab mein Bruder den Kopf aufschlagen, und weint und weint und wohl sich nicht zufrieden geben."
When was the first English translation published of the Brothers Grimm, and was any of that German spirit lost?
Yeah, it was. In 1823, Edgar Taylor published an English edition, and it was scholarly. If you read his introduction to the volume, he sees himself as a scholar sharing the scholarly work of the Brothers Grimm with the English scholarly public. He does, though, acknowledge that children might be attracted to these stories, and for that reason, he has amended them to some degree. So, for example, in the 1812 edition of Snow White that the Brothers Grimm published, when Snow White's stepmother, or mother in some versions, sends the huntsman out to the forest with Snow White, in the Grimm version, she says, "Take little Snow White out into the forest, and I want you to kill her. And I want you to cut out her lungs and her liver and bring them back to me so that I may boil them in salt and eat them."
Du sollst es töten und mir Lunge und Leber zum Wahrzeichen mitbringen.
Yeah, that part didn't get into the Disney version.
It certainly didn't, and it also didn't get into the English version. So in the English version, he says, "Take little Snow White out into the forest and lose her." Which he has some amazing line where he says, "Due to the scrupulous fastidiousness of modern taste and the fact that children might be attracted to these stories, I have changed some of the details."
Adam, you take it a step further, as you've done in A Tale Dark and Grim and the follow-ups. How do you go about that, though? I mean, when you retell the Grimm brothers, what's your starting point, the English translation, or do you dig further back and kind of focus group with kids today on what will work and how much detail do you want to keep in that is kind of embedded in grotesqueness?
I start with my favorite translation of the Grimm's fairy tales, which is Ralf Mannheim's translation. He keeps the lyric quality as well as all the blood and the gore. And then I tell them to children. So the first time I ever told these stories to children, I was supposed to be a substitute librarian for a day. And I was thinking of that time when I first heard the real Grimm's fairy tales, and I took the book off the shelf and I opened it up to a story called Faithful Johannes. And in this story, children get their heads cut off by their parents. And I read that and I thought, huh, that's interesting. Can I read this to second graders? And then I thought, let's find out. So I brought the book in and I started reading it to the kids. And very quickly, I started to notice that they were getting nervous, a little uncomfortable. So I would make jokes to calm them down, or I would warn them when something really terrible was about to happen. And I think I did a pretty decent job, because when I looked up, every child had the same look on his face. Every kid looked traumatized. I think traumatized is the word. So I dismissed the children. Some of them were crying. I think one little boy peed his pants. But a few of them came up to me afterwards, and they were shaking. But one of them pointed her finger in my face and she said, "That was good." And I said, "What?" She said, "You should make that into a book."
Wow.
And I thought, huh, maybe I should. So I read the stories and then always I tell them to children. I add in jokes. I highlight the scary parts or I downplay the parts that I don't think they're enjoying. And then I retell them in my books.
A Tale Dark and Grim, which is your book which kind of started this whole trilogy, they've been translated now themselves into German. So any reaction from the German-speaking world about these tales that have gone through so many mutations and now your interpretation has been translated back into German?
I think the Germans are very attached to the Grimm's fairy tales, and I was therefore very pleased that I get a lot of positive feedback from the Germans. I think they like it when Grimm's tales get credit, get recognized. It's been funny to see how they've been translated into a variety of languages and to see the various titles that are put onto the book. So, for example, because in my book, A Tale Dark and Grim, Grim is a pun. It means both frightening and scary as well as the Brothers Grimm. Well, that pun works in German, in fact. The title in German is Eine dunkel und grimmige Geschichte, a dark and grim tale. But in other languages, Romance languages, for example, it doesn't work at all. The pun doesn't make any sense because grim doesn't mean scary. So, for example, in French, the book is called The Terrifying and Bloody History of Hansel and Gretel, which I think is actually a rather good title as well.
Yeah, that kind of works.
I had one amusing experience with a translation. I got an email from a young girl from Thailand. She said, "In my culture, you can't say that a brother is just a brother or a sister is just a sister. It's always an older brother or a younger brother, an older sister or a younger sister. So who's older, Hansel or Gretel? And now in my version of the story, they're twins, even if in the original they're not. And so I said, well, they're twins. They're the same age. And she said, no, that's not possible. In my culture, it's always older brother, younger brother.
Somebody still has to come out first.
Exactly. So I said, I don't know. Who do you think it is? And she says, well, on this, she's writing me emails every time, every interaction.
Wow.
She says, well, on this page, Gretel seems older. But on this page, Hansel seems older. So which is it? And I say, kid, I don't know. And she writes back and says, the reason I'm so curious is I am the Thai translator of your book. And it's important for me to know. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Had you just told me that in the first place, I would have arbitrarily chosen Gretel. So Gretel
Meet
is older
translator.
In Thai. Yes.
Adam Gidwitz, author of A Tale Dark and Grim, In a Glass Grimly, and The Grim Conclusion. And in a little bit, you can hear Gidwitz tell his version of Snow White. It's quite something. I just want to break off for a moment to tell you about one of the other podcasts in the Soundworks network. It's Radio Ambulante Unscripted, and the latest episode is a conversation with the wonderful writer Francisco Goldman. We've had him on the big show a couple of times. Goldman has a new book out called The Interior Circuit, A Mexico City Chronicle. Give it a listen at soundworks.org. Okay, back now to the Brothers Grimm and the remarkable manipulations around their stories. This is Tchaikovsky from his ballet, The Sleeping Beauty, based not on the Grimm Brothers version, but the Charles Perrault version of the Sleeping Beauty story. This is, of course, a famous piece of music made even more famous by this.
I know you, I walked with you once upon a tree.
Yes, Disney, the 1959 animated classic Sleeping Beauty, Anne-Marie Costa singing. The film is based loosely on the Perrault and the Grimm stories, and if ever there were a piece of music that just encapsulated the word Disneyfied, it's this. It's so jolly. So here's this piece of music that, just like a Grimm story, has metastasized quite a bit over the years. But this year, Disney came back with a much darker version to go with a much darker take on the Sleeping Beauty tale.
I know you, I walked with you once upon a tree.
The singer here is Lana Del Rey, the movie Maleficent. Disney took the blue pill for this one. Or is it the red one? Anyway, those Grimm boys, they would have approved.
Familiar, ugly, and I know it's true that visions are seldom all they see.
The Grimm brothers, they definitely would have liked this too. Adam Gidwitz is telling, not reading, but telling his version of Snow White. Are you sitting comfortably? Then he'll begin.
Once upon a time, on a snowy winter's day, a beautiful queen was sitting at her window, staring out at the snow falling, and she was sewing. And as she sewed, she pricked her thumb with a needle, and a drop of blood fell from her thumb onto the snowy windowsill. And when she saw the red blood on the white snow, she sighed, and she said, "Oh, how I wish I had a child, as red as blood, as white as snow, with hair as dark as the windowsill." And as soon as she said it, a sense of peace came over her. Well, as the months went by, she grew round with child, and after 9 months she had a little baby girl, as red as blood, as white as snow, with hair as black as this windowsill. And she was so happy, the queen took one look at this little girl, and she was so happy that she died. I know it's a little bit surprising, but it used to happen all the time. It was very common. It would just be like, ha, 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 ah, ah, dead. So she died. The father didn't know what to do with the little girl all by himself, so he married another woman, and this woman was very wicked, and we all know her as the evil stepmother. Except, here's the thing. In the original version of the Brothers Grimm story, the mother does not die. In the original version of the Brothers Grimm story, the evil queen is not Snow White's stepmother. It is her real mother, and that is the version that I'm going to tell you now. So Snow White's mother raised little Snow White, and everything was perfectly fine and happy in the house. There was only one weird thing, which was that Snow White's mother had a mirror, and she looked in the mirror, and you guys know this part of the story. She would always say, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" And the mirror would look back and say, "You, queen, are the fairest of them all. Except one day, when Snow White was maybe 7 years old, her mother looked in the mirror and she said, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" And the mirror looked back and said, "You, Queen, are the fairest here, but little Snow White is fairer than you by far." And her mother said, "What? I'm going to kill that little punk." Or something like that. It's translated, so that's approximate. Anyway, she calls to the huntsman, and she has the huntsman come into the room, and she says, "Huntsman, take little Snow White out into the forest, and I want you to kill her. And I want you to cut out her lungs and her liver and bring them back to me so that I may boil them in salt and eat them. Because as you all know, if ever you plan to eat your own child, boiling them in salt, delicious, the best recipe." Anyway, the huntsman takes little Snow White out into the forest, and he's about to kill her, and little Snow White says, "Please, please don't kill me." And the huntsman says, "I didn't want to kill you. Run away and never come back." So Snow White runs away, and just then a young boar comes into the clearing, and the huntsman catches him, kills it, cuts out its lungs and its liver, brings them back to Snow White's mother, and Snow White's mother indeed boils them in salt and eats them. Meanwhile, Snow White is running through the forest, and she comes to a little house, and she goes into the little house, and in the little house she sees 7 little cups on a table and 7 little plates, each laid with food. And she takes a bite from each little plate and a sip from each little cup, and she sees 7 little beds, and she's very tired, so she gets in the first bed, but it's too hard, and the second bed, but it's too soft, and the third one's too wide, and the fourth one's too narrow. Now, I know this sounds like Goldilocks. It is not Goldilocks, of course, but a lot of these fairy tales share motifs that are repeated from story to story, and this happens to be one of those. Anyway, she gets to the 7th bed. It's just right. She falls asleep. A little while later, 7 dwarves come in. And they're not like in the Disney movie. They don't have names like Happy and Sleepy and Stupid and whatever their names are in the movie. But they come in and they say, "Hey, someone's been eating from my cup, and somebody's been eating from my plate, and somebody's been drinking from my cup, and somebody's been sleeping in my bed, and somebody's been sleeping in my bed, and somebody." And the 7th guy's like, "Hey, guys, there's somebody still sleeping in my bed right now." So they all come over and they see little Snow White. They don't want to wake her up. The next morning, though, when she does wake up, she explains that her mother tried to kill her, and they invite her to live with them in their little house. Meanwhile, back in the palace, Snow White's mother goes to her mirror after eating her delicious organ dinner, and she says, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" And the mirror looks back and says, "You, Queen, are the fairest here, but little Snow White, living with the 7 dwarves in the forest, is fairer than you by far." And her mother says, "What? I'm gonna kill that little punk!" So she goes into her closet where she takes out an old lady costume. She just happens to have an old lady costume in her closet. And she takes a basket full of laces, bodice laces, to tie up the back of a dress. And she goes out into the forest. And she goes to the little 7 dwarves' house. She knocks on the door. And little Snow White opens the door and finds an old lady standing there. And the old lady, her mother, says, "Little girl, would you like to try one of these beautiful dress laces?" And little Snow White says, "Mm-hmm." And her mother smiles and says, "Turn around." Snow White turns around, and her mother laces up her dress, and she pulls it tighter and tighter and tighter till little Snow White goes, "Ah, ah," and falls down, dead. Her mother smiles, goes back to the palace. A little while later, the 7 dwarves come home, and they open the door, and they see little Snow White lying there, and they go, "Oh, no!" And they shake her, and she doesn't wake up, and they slap her in the face, and she doesn't wake up, and they throw water on her, and she doesn't wake up. They turn her over, and they see that the bodice laces are tied so tightly, so they cut them. And as soon as they cut them, little Snow White goes, and comes back to life. Back in the palace, her mother gets to the mirror, and she says, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" And the mirror looks back at her and says, "You, Queen, are the fairest here, but little Snow White, living with the 7 dwarves in the forest, is fairer than you by far." And her mother says, "What? I am going to kill that little punk!" So she goes to her closet where she has yet another old lady costume. I don't know why she has so many of them, but it is a completely different, unrecognizable old lady costume. Maybe they were on sale at JCPenney for old ladies. I'm not sure. Anyway, she puts on the old lady costume, and this time she takes a basket of combs. Hair combs. And she takes the combs, on each point of each comb, she puts poison, a deadly poison. And she takes this basket out into the forest. She knocks on the little door, and little Snow White opens the door just a little bit and sees a completely different old lady standing there. And the old lady, her mother, says, "Little girl, Would you like to try one of these beautiful combs? And little Snow White says, the seven dwarfs told me not to let any strangers in. And her mother says, I don't want to come in, little girl. But look at these beautiful combs. Wouldn't you like to try one? And little Snow White says, mm-hmm. So she takes the comb and starts to comb her hair with it. And as soon as one of the points of the comb touches her scalp, she goes, ah, 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 and falls down dead. Her mother smiles, turns around, and goes back to the palace. A little while later, the seven dwarfs come home and they open the door and they see little Snow White lying there and they go, oh no! Not again! So they shake her and she doesn't wake up, and they slap her in the face and she doesn't wake up, and they throw water on her and she doesn't wake up. They turn her over and her dress laces aren't too tight. Then they run their hands through her hair and they find the comb. And they pull out the comb, and as soon as they do, little Snow White goes and comes back to life. Back in the palace, her mother looks in the mirror and says, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? And the mirror says, you, queen, are the fairest here. But little Snow White living with the seven dwarves in the forest is fairer than you by far. And the mother says, say it with me. What? I'm gonna kill that little punk! So this time she puts on a completely different old lady dress, because it was 3-for-1 actually at the JCPenney for old ladies. And this time she takes an apple and she covers one half of the apple with a poison so deadly that when the Brothers Grimm describe it in their 1812 edition, they describe it not as a poisonous apple, but as a poisonous, poisonous apple. It's not just poisonous, it's poisonous, poisonous. That's very poisonous. The other half, though, she leaves completely clean. She takes a basket of these apples out into the forest, knocks on the door, little Snow White opens the door, sees a completely different old lady there. She says, the old lady says, little girl, would you like to try one of my apples? And Snow White says, I'm not supposed to take anything from strangers, nothing from strangers. And her mother says, oh, such a shame. They're such delicious apples. Look, I'll try one. And she picks up the apple and she turns the clean side of it to her face. And she takes a bite and she says, oh, it's so delicious. Wouldn't you like to try it, little girl? And little Snow White says, mm-hmm. So she takes the apple, turning the poisoned side to her face, and she takes a bite. And she chews and chews and she falls down dead. And her mother smiles, turns around, and goes back to the palace. The seven dwarves open the door and they see little Snow White lying there and they say, ugh, again? So they shake her and she doesn't wake up, and they slap her in the face and she doesn't wake up, and they throw water on her and she doesn't wake up. They turn her over and her dress laces aren't too tight. They run their hands through her hair and there's no comb. They shake her again. They slap her in the face again. They throw water on her again. She doesn't wake up. She's dead. Back in the palace, her mother looks in the mirror and says, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? And the mirror looks back and says, you, queen, are the fairest of them all. The seven dwarves are so sad that they take little Snow White and they build a little coffin for her made out of glass, because even in death she is still very beautiful. And they put her name and her age on the coffin, and they keep the coffin in their house so that every morning when they rise up and every evening when they go to bed, they can look on Snow White and think of her. Now, the Brothers Grimm wrote many different endings to this story, but they changed it continually through their various editions that they published through their lifetime. But the 1812 edition was the first that they published, and I think the best. It goes like this. A prince is coming through the forest, and he sees the seven dwarfs' little house, and he's tired and he's hot, and he knocks on the door, and they invite him in for something to eat and something to drink. And when he comes inside, he sees little Snow White lying there in the glass coffin. And as soon as he sees her, he falls madly in love with her. Which is weird for two reasons. First, because she's like 7 years old. And second, she's dead. But no matter, he falls madly in love with her. And he says, please, will you let me take her with me? And the dwarves say, no, that's creepy. And he says, I'll pay you. And they say, that's really creepy. Now you definitely can't have her. And he says, I'll die if you don't let me take her. And they say, well, don't die. So they give him the coffin, and his servants have to carry it home. And he is so in love with little Snow White that everywhere he goes, the servants have to carry her around with him. So he's eating dinner, and she's sitting at the other end of the table, like, dead in a coffin. And he says, I love you. And he goes to bed at night, and she's lying next to him in the coffin, and he says, I love you. And he goes to the bath. Never mind. Anyway, one day, the servants are so sick of carrying little Snow White around that the prince says, I'm going to the can, just bring her in. And one of the servants says, "Ugh, I'm so sick of carrying around this little girl." And he smacks the coffin. And as soon as he smacks the coffin, little Snow White goes, "Ugh!" And a chunk of apple flies up out of her mouth, hits the glass of the coffin, and goes like, "Eh!" down the glass. And little Snow White says, and comes back to life. And the prince rushes up to her and says, "My true bride!" And Snow White says, "Who are you?" But because it's a fairy tale, they fall in love and they get married. I know that she's seven, but we're just going to skip that part. They get married. And at the wedding celebration, everybody's invited. Everybody from the kingdom. All the neighboring royalty. And who should arrive at the party but Snow White's mother? And as soon as she sees her, little Snow White calls the prince over to her. And she points and she says, "That one." And the prince goes to his closet where he takes out two shoes made of iron. I do not know where you get shoes made of iron. They're not for sale at JCPenney for old ladies. Maybe Foot Locker for torture instruments. I'm not sure. Anyway, he takes the iron shoes and he puts them into a fire until they are glowing hot. And then he takes them out of the fire and he puts them in front of Snow White's mother. And Snow White's mother is forced to put on the iron shoes and dance in them. And dance and dance and dance until she falls down dead. And the prince and Snow White live happily ever after. The end.
That, I have to say, was quite spellbinding. It's also the end of the podcast. Go to pri.org/language for more on Adam Gidwitz and his grim retellings. You can also find the pod on Facebook. There's a Well in Words page. And I'm on Twitter. My handle is Patricox, PatriCox. See you next time.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks
from PRI.